The title of the source packet you see is called Counting Our Blessings. So why is that the title?
Figure out how many brachos we make.
Exactly. We got to figure out how many brachos we recite on the night of the Seder on our four cups of wine. We all learned over the last several weeks in these dapim, on these pages, in Maseches Pesachim, in Tractate Pesachim, that there are four cups of wine that we drink. You would wonder, well, how many brachos of Borei Pri HaGafen go with those four cups, right? The first cup gets the bracha, which includes the Borei Pri HaGafen. It gets Kiddush, so you have Kiddush, the first cup. The second cup is going to have Asher Ga'alonu, the special bracha of Sha'as Anisim that we recite at the conclusion of the Haggadah. The third cup is going to get the Birchas HaMazon, the benching. And the fourth cup gets the bracha of Hallel. So those are the four brachos, so to speak, the four blessings that relate to the actual text of the Haggadah. The question is, well, how many times do you recite what we refer to as a Birchas HaNehanin, a blessing on the enjoyment of your wine? In general, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that a person is not allowed to enjoy any part of the world that Hashem has given us without saying thank you first, without acknowledging that this is a gift from Hashem. So there is an Isser. Gemara has even an analogy. It sounds like it's a theft, so to speak. It's theft from the divine treasury to take something without reciting a Borei Pri HaGafen. At the same time, we're all familiar that if I have a cup of coffee and I take one sip and I begin with my blessing of Shahakol, I don't recite another Shahakol Nieh B'Dvaro when I drink the next sip. There's some expiration to the term of my bracha. So when it comes to these four cups that I'm drinking at the Seder, well, how many times do I need to recite Borei Pri HaGafen? That's the question we want to figure out today. One interesting side note, which is a takeaway from this, but it's really a beautiful idea. There is a tradition that dates back to rabbinic sources in the time of the Mishnah, although it does not appear in the Chumash. It's not a biblical law, but it's a very ancient tradition that we do not eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Yes.
Why don't we eat matzah?
Oh, that is the question. Why should we not eat matzah on Erev Pesach? Excellent. So the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud says, you know why you shouldn't eat matzah on Erev Pesach? It uses a very fascinating analogy that a man who were to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, it would be akin to a man living with the woman who he's about to marry the day before they get married. Boel arusaso beveis chamiv. So there's a joke that people used to say that a man came to the rabbi and he said, "Rabbi, I tried both of these and they are not the same." So that's a Yiddish joke. I don't know if there's any truth to it. I don't know how appropriate it is to say in a shir, but there is such a joke that goes around. So one reason, one second, Michal, how do we understand? So this is obviously one takeaway from this is you should learn a measure of patience. And if you're getting married tonight, so you should wait to find that person to be together tonight. And you're so excited about the mitzvah matzah, you're going to eat the mitzvah matzah the night of the Seder. Don't jump the gun and eat the matzah on Erev Pesach. But some Rishonim, they do the math, and depending on how you do the math, and depending on the conclusion of today's shir, they say, you know why that's the analogy? Because they say, if you do the right math, when a person gets married, they recite seven blessings, sheva brachos. So if you count up the number of brachos that you say at the Seder before you eat the matzah, it is seven. Alternatively, some Rishonim say that the number is nine, because there's sheva brachos plus the birchas se'irusin, the first blessing that comes at the beginning with the Borei Pri HaGafen. So you really have nine. So is it seven or is it nine? And how many do you count? Well, this issue that before you eat the matzah, it's like a marriage where you have seven brachos or nine brachos before the marriage, it's going to depend somewhat on today's discussion of how many Borei Pri HaGafens do you make at the Seder? Because in your mind, you're thinking, well, how many brachos does it get does it take to get to Motzi Matzah? So you start with Kiddush. So you have Bori Pri HaGafen, and then you have Kiddush, and then you have Bori Pri HaAdama, and you're going to have Shechianu, Bori Pri HaAdama, you're going to have Asher Ga'alonu, Motzi Matzah,
and
Mara. There's a whole discussion here. So maybe you shouldn't count one, maybe you should count two. But the idea that the number of brachos actually has maybe a parallel to a sheva brachos is a way of explaining that Yerushalmi, that appears in the Orchos Chaim and other Rishonim, a long time ago. So how many brachos should you recite? What would you think? So the Gemara tells us, you saw in Pesachim and Kuftes Amid Beis, the Gemara tells us that there is a traditional issue with drinking four cups of wine. In the times of the Talmud, they were sensitive to creatures, demonic creatures that we do not perceive in our world, but they had special sensitivity to spiritual dimensions that we don't understand. They had metaphysical realities of dangerous creatures that were associated with pears, which is the assumption of this Gemara, and that's why next week we're going to skip the next few Amudim, because it's all talking about Zugos that we don't understand today. But in that reality, they were very sensitive to this that would appear dangerous. So how could Chazal institute that you should have four cups if those four cups, that's two pairs of two, that's a danger of Zugos? Yes, Michal.
So basically, a long time ago, and Pesach Kasha put down egg matzah. Do Rabbis all have egg matzah in Cholamot?
Okay, so Michal is raising a very good question, which is a very important question beyond the scope of today. But when we see that Yerushalmi, we could get further into that, which is exactly, which is if the prohibition of eating matzah and erev Pesach is because you jumped the gun from what you should be eating on the night of Pesach, well, in Ashkenazi community, and I suspect many of us come from Ashkenazi communities, we do not eat egg matzah or what we call matzah ashira on the night of Pesach. So perhaps you should say that matzah ashira, egg matzah, should be permitted on Erev Pesach. So this is a fact. Now, it's a little tricky because even Ashkenazim, there is the practice that people who are elderly, who can't eat regular matzah, or ketanim, children, they could sometimes eat matzah ashira if they can't, you know, they can't get something else. It depends on what the problem is with matzah ashira. Is it that it is simply matzah ashira, it's going to be not fit for lechem oni, poverty bread for the night of the Seder, or do we say that since it was made with other liquids than water, maybe it speeds up in some way. It speeds up the chimutz process, which would make it problematic for anybody. But that's a good question. We're not going to tackle that today. But yes, there is a big question about what matzah you're allowed to eat in Erev Pesach. So coming back again, so the Gemara says, how can you have four cups of wine? How could Chazal be misaking its zugos? So the Gemara says, number one, don't worry about that. It's Leil Shimurim. Leil HaMeshumer Uba. It is a special night where the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, gives us extra protection. That's why many people have the practice that they do not say the bracha of Hamapil when they go to sleep the first night of Pesach, which is a bracha about Hashem watching over us at night. Many people don't say Hamapil. Some people, I think, even don't lock their door at night, the first night of the Seder, because it's Leil Shimurim. It's a night of guarding. The Ribbono Shel Olam, God, watches over us, so you don't have to worry. So he says, don't worry about Mazikin. It's the night of the Seder. You don't have to worry. That's the first answer. Then the Gemara says, yes?
Why is Passover 8 days?
Oh, very good question. Why is Passover 8 days? So first of all, it depends if you're in Israel or outside of Israel. If you're outside of Israel, so we're going to observe it for 8 days. If you're in Israel, it's only 7 days.
Oh.
If you look in the Chumash, it's actually only 7 days. When I was growing up, I never knew that. I don't know why I never paid attention. I always thought, like, I don't know, it's an 8-day holiday. Then you open the Chumash, you're like, oh, it's only a 7-day holiday. And yes, but 1 second. So there's 7 days of Pesach. It parallels 7 days of Sukkot. Yes, what's the second question?
The second question is, when we eat matzah, do we say hamotzi lechem in
ha'aretz? That is also a very good question. Do you say hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz when you eat matzah? The answer is yes. And not only that, that is the origin of an interesting custom that I suspect if we took a survey, many of you have, which is that when you eat the first bite of matzah, the first serving of matzah, you eat two kezesim. I don't know how many of you do this, but this is a long-standing practice. One kezais is correlated to the hamotzi, and the other kezais is correlated to the matzah. That's not ikar adin, b'dieved. Let's say you can't eat so much matzah. You can't handle that much matzah. So you just eat the first kazayis in the front, then you eat, you know, the second most important kazayis is going to be your afikoman, because half the Rishonim think that the afikoman is the main matzah. Then you have korech, that's an old tradition from Hillel. Then you eat maybe a fourth kazayis, which is the motzi matzah. And then, if you're still in it to win it, you have the fifth olive worth of matzah, fifth kazayis of matzah, which goes with your afikoman. With your afikoman, you get two. One reminds you of the Pesach, and one reminds you of the chagiga. By the time you're finished with that, you had enough matzah to last you till tomorrow night. So you have five, lechatchila, sheba lechatchila, the most ideal, MP, most preferred, five units of matzah. And each unit is a debate how big it is. But let's assume that for your first kazayis, you want, if you're using a square hand matzah, half. That's the larger size. For the rest of the kazayisim, a third of the machine matzah. And then, depending on how thick your hand matzah is, that you'll approximate. But anyway, the second day of the Gemara says, Ravina Omar, Arba Kasi, four kosos, tekinu rabbanan derecherus, kol chad v'chad mitzvah ba'an pei nafshehu. Each one of these is an independent mitzvah. So this requirement to be concerned about the dangerous pairs is not a problem here, because they're not actually pairs. They're four independent mitzvahs. So comes Rav Yitzchak Alfasi. So Rav Yitzchak Alfasi is living in Morocco. He's living in Morocco 1,000 years ago. And he says, I look at this passage in the Talmud, and I say, oh, it must be that if there are four different mitzvahs, I should recite four different blessings. And not just four different blessings on each mitzvah, Kiddush, Asher Ga'alonu, Birchas HaMazon, and Birchas HaShir, Hallel, I should also say four different Bori Pri HaGafens. And this is what the Rif codifies in his summary of Jewish law. It appears, for those who have it in the packets, in the Hebrew packets, it's in the last section in the Rif. The Rif says, he says, Ravina Omar kol echad ve'echad mitzvah bifnei atzmahu, va'amri bravasa. The rabbis taught, my teacher said, ho'ol v'kol echad ve'echad mitzvah ba'atz bifnei atzmahu, each one is its own mitzvah. How barchinon bori priagofen akol kasa. You say bori priagofen on every cup. And he brings a raya, a proof, from a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, from Tractate Chulin. I don't know, did you get a chance to see? You saw the Gemara in Chulin already? So the Mishnah discusses there in Chulin a case where a person is slaughtering many birds, one after the next. And then they're going to have to perform the mitzvah, or chayas, or wild animals, they're going to perform the mitzvah of kisui hadam, covering the blood with dirt. Okay, so the Gemara in that context is discussing how many blessings you're going to recite if you do a long sequence. You're going to do one and then knock them all out. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you first do the chaya, then you make the kisui hadam on that one, and then separately for the oaf. So the Gemara in that context says, Mode Raya Rabbi Yehuda le'inyan bracha she'inu mavarech ela bracha achas. And then the Gemara challenges that and says, what do you mean? Is that really true? They quote a case where someone is sitting down to have a meal. They had a glass of wine at the beginning, which, you know, was very common in those days, rather than drinking putrid water that was probably totally unsanitary in antiquity. So they drank mostly wine, which was much more, it was healthier, it was delicious, it was filling, because they didn't have that much to eat in the first place, and it stayed pretty well. So they were drinking wine. How many times do you need to make a bracha? So the Gemara goes back and forth, two different opinions. And our conclusion, the way we say it, is that you're going to make a bracha on the first cup of wine that you drink, and then you're going to make another bracha again later when you bench on a cup. Used to be, that was very common. Today, only some people do this, but it's a proper thing that you should make a bracha on the cup that you bench with. So the Gemara wants to know why. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because there's something called a hefsek, an interruption. There's an interposition. There's something that is stopping the flow of the first blessing from taking effect, and then you have to start again. And what is that? That's the recitation of Birchas HaMazon. You take the cup, you bless, you thank God for the food, then you're going to drink it. Well, I just spent 3 minutes saying the declaration of Birchas HaMazon. So now, I just interrupted. Why is that called an interruption? So the Gemara says, because it's possible when it comes to Shechita to keep slaughtering and to also keep pouring the dirt. But Mishta ubruchi bahadi hadadi lo efshar. It is impossible, the Gemara says here in Chulin, to drink and speak at the same time. So the benching afterwards, when I have to say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Hazonis, right? When I do that, I cannot possibly be drinking. So the Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, says, is it possible to drink and say the Haggadah at the same time? No. That's right. It is impossible. And therefore he says, it must be that the Haggadah is the hefsik. It's an interruption. And if you interrupt, you need to start again with a new bracha, Rishona. Now, there's a separate discussion about bracha achrona, the following bracha, the ala gefen, which we're not going to talk about today, but that's also a discussion here you saw in the Mishnah Berurah if you got that far.
We don't make Birkat Samazon at the same time as we Kiddush. Kiddush is always after Birkat Samazon.
So the you're going to say the bracha gefen afterwards because you want to hold the cup and celebrate the benching with the cup and you drink it afterwards. So this is the opinion of the Rif, and if you saw Tosfos and Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, where the Gemara has a similar discussion about this back and forth with Rav Ashi, Tosfos, in his commentary on the side, he also makes the same point that we have the practice that we recite a Borei Prah Gofen on every cup, Da Haggadah Vehilelo Nami Have Hefsik. Haggadah and Halal is the Hefsik. So this is option one. Four Kosos, four brachos, four Borei Prah Gofens. Comes the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel. The Rosh lived the end of the 13th century. He lived primarily in the Rhine Valley. However, toward the end of his life, there was a very, very, very difficult incident and a series of incidents of local noblemen who were picking up Jews and ransoming them. Because when you run out of money, the easiest and quickest thing to do in the Middle Ages is to ransom Jews. So there was a famous gaon, a famous rabbinic luminary, probably at that time was the most significant Torah personality in all of Germany and France. His name is Maram of Rothenburg, Rav Meir ben Baruch. And Rav Meir ben Baruch, I think it was the year 1293, he was picked up. He was turned in, unfortunately, by somebody who was, I believe it was an apostate. And he was picked up by the authorities, and he was taken to a castle, and he was held there, and he told his students, do not ransom me. Why did he tell them that? Because the Gemara says in Gittin that we're worried that if people start paying exorbitant ransoms, these guys are going to get the idea that it's a really good way to make money. He died in prison. He remained imprisoned until, I think, 1306 or 1307, when a Jew had Rachmanis, finally, his name was Alexander Wimpham, and he ransomed his body that it should be buried. But meanwhile, the Rosh, who was the chief disciple of the Maram of Rutenberg, he saw what was going on, and he's like, I gotta get out of town. So he ran from Germany down to France. From France, where did he go? Down to Spain. And that's where he settled for the end of his life. He lived in Spain in the early part of the 14th century. So he, because he was living in the Rhine Valley and he was exposed to all the teaching of the Tosfos, he knew what the traditions were. There were many Sephardic rabbis at that time who didn't necessarily know what the traditions were going on in France. So the Rosh says, I'll tell you what was going on in France. This is what I heard. This is what I know. And I totally disagree. He says, he hears the first opinion. If you had a chance to see from the Rosh says, I don't agree. I think that the Haggadah does not constitute a hefsek. It does not constitute an interruption. And therefore, I think you should only make two brachos. One at the beginning and one after Birchas HaMazon. And he's not the only one. If you saw on the bottom of the Rif, in the back of the Talmud, there is this commentary of Rav Yitzchak Alfasi we mentioned from Morocco, from Fez. At the bottom, there was a very important figure. His name is Rav Zrachia. He lived in Lunel, which is a small community in southern France, in Provence. So he lived in Provence in the 14th century, 13th century, and he gets the commentary of the Rif, and he says, I totally disagree with that. I think that the Haggadah is not an interposition. That's part of the flow of the evening. You know, at the beginning, you're going to say Borei Prah Gofen, you're going to dip karpas, then you're going to go through the Haggadah, you're going to say Asher Galana, you're going to go weiter. So that's not interposition, that's not a hefsik. It's not. There's no hesach hadas there. So the Baal HaMor totally disagrees. So there's a fight at the bottom of the page you saw between the Baal HaMor and then the Ran, Rabbi Nunisim ben Ruvin of Girona, he defends the Rif and the Ramban. But this comes back and forth. This is the two opinions. The Rosh says, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, he says, well, I think that this proof, maybe the story of Ravashi about reciting the Berachas HaMazon from that maybe should be a proof to me that Berachas HaMazon is only a hefsek because it's a totally separate entity. But if you're going to keep going, so then there are ways to answer that because you could say, really, these four cups, it's not just a Bori Pri HaGafen, it's really a separate independent mitzvah. But this is kind of the back and forth over this issue about whether or not the Haggadah constitutes a hefsek / whether or not these four mitzvahs create this separate din. So
it seems like a hefsek potentially defined as an intentional break.
Good. So one element here, exactly, Michael, is that the question of hefsek partly depends on your mindset. Hefsek can be a physical interruption, like I stopped eating and I started saying Shemona Esrei, because this is a discussion in Hilchos Berachas HaMazon. Let's say you interrupted your meal and you went to Daven Mincha. So do you have to start a new Bracha Rishona again? Is that called a hefsek? But the second element of it is even if it's not, you didn't interrupt it with something else, you had what's called a hesach hadas. You changed your attention to something else. So a hesach hadas, it doesn't require a new bracha achrona, but it does require a new bracha rishona. So the question is, do you have a hesach hadas here? So let's get to that in 1 second. So comes the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, 16th century, says, we got to tell you, what do we do? Following the tour, Rabbeinu Yaakov and Asher, what do you do? Somebody asks you, you have a 2 days of machlokas rishonim back and forth. If you want a lot longer of an essay on this, you can look at the essay of the Maharal Miprag. The Maharal Miprag, in his Sefer Gvuras Hashem, in the 49th chapter, he has a very long explanation of this whole issue back and forth, going through all the proofs of the different rishonim. So the Shulchan Aruch says, I follow the rush.
I have a question.
Yes. This is also a good question. The question was, when do you count the Omer on the second night of Pesach? Two different customs. Some people do it in shul, some people do it after their Seder. We're not going to take a poll, but I suspect even within this own room, we have different customs on that question. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, you follow the Rush, which means you only say two Bori Pri HaGafens. One at the first, and then one after Berachas HaMazon, like your standard benching a la kos. Interestingly, surprisingly, in this context, the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles in Krakow in the 17th century, he follows the Rif. And you know who else follows the Rif? Did you see? The Rambam! Ironically, this is an unusual case where the Sfardim who follow Rav Yosef Karo and the Shulchan Aruch, they follow the Rush and they do not follow the Rambam. Maimonides, he says, you saw this inside, the Rambam says that you make a separate bracha on each kos, and that's what the Rama says. So, if someone were to ask you, why is it that the Rama, why did Ashkenazim, Rav Moshe Isserles, why do we make a separate bracha on each of the four kosos, what would you tell them? So, potentially, you might tell them two reasons. Number one is that they were Masaking, they established each one has its own coast. And this is what the Magen Avram, Rav Avram Abela Gombiner, also late 17th century, on the commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he says, if someone were to ask you, why do you make four Bori Pri HaGafens? He would say, because remember that language of the first piece in the Talmud? Each cup is its own mitzvah? That's why. Well, wait a second. We did have a second reason. What was the second reason? Not just because they are four independent mitzvos. What was the second reason? That the Haggadah is a
blessing.
Is a hefsek. It's an interruption. That the Magen Avraham thinks is not the strong reason.
That doesn't explain all four. That just explains one to two.
And therefore, by the way, if you look in the Prima Gadim, he thinks it's better, actually, he says, L'chatchila, you should have in mind not to cover the second cup with your first Bori Pri HaGafen, because he's a little bit worried about that. But the Magen Avraham says the primary reason is because they're four different cups. They're four different mitzvos. And similarly, the Taz, Rav David Halevi, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, a little bit earlier, he says, you know what that means? When they made four different cups, what they essentially were saying is, when you have this cup, it's as if you are having in mind not to cover the next cup. That's the purpose. It's ki'ilu, it's so to speak, it's like a condition that my mind has it not to drink anymore. But this actually gets us in, it's beyond the purview of today, into a much bigger discussion about when you're allowed to drink extra and what's considered to add to the four cups, because it's got to be specifically four. So here comes one kind of catch-all piece, which I was very excited to see for the first time, which is, until now we just said that there is a principle that we know we have to drink four cups, and that these four cups constitute four independent drinkings, but there is a debate as to whether or not that generates four different pre-blessings of Bori Pri HaGafen. According to the Sephardic tradition following the Rush, it does not. There are only two. According to the Ashkenazi tradition, there are four. But even within the Ashkenazi tradition of four, we said there might be two reasons. The primary reason, said the Magen Avraham and the Taz, is because each one is an independent mitzvah. But the Rif added this element to the fact that there is a hefsek, there's an interruption. You could actually ask, why do you need two reasons? More precisely, if you looked carefully at the comment of Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, I want to understand something. He said, I heard from my rabbis, Rav Vossi, he said, my rabbi said, you say four Bori Pri HaGafens, because it's four different mitzvahs. That's what he said, right? And then he says, I'll bring you a proof from a Gemara in Chulin. Is the Gemara in Chulin talking about how many mitzvahs?
No.
What's the Gemara in Chulin talking about? The rules of hefsek, interruptions. Aren't those two different reasons? Right? He says, the reason why is because it's four brachos. I'll bring you a proof from the laws of Hesach Hadas and hefsek. You can't, what does one have to do with the other? And that's kind of what the Magen Avraham is bothered by. He's like, yeah, that's not really the reason. The real reason is because it's four different mitzvos. But if that's not the reason, so why is it? So,
well, the first opinion in the Gemara that we talked about, Ravina says it was four different mitzvos, but the first opinion was, I didn't know I was going to drink anymore. So it is, they did even address the hefsek in that context of that.
Very good. So why would you even bring up the fact that it's a Hesach Hadas if clearly this answer is not basing it on Hesach Hadas? So this year I just got, Baruch Hashem, the Rebbe Shlom dropped in my lap, needed for this. I was in New York last week visiting YU for meetings, and in the back of the YU Beis Medrash they have Svarim that are sold, that are published by the Rabbeim. One of the YU Rabbeim, who is a very prolific author, very accomplished author, is Rabbi Baruch Simon, one of the Rosh Yeshiva. So I saw in the back of the shelf, where they're selling all the different books, that they have a Haggadah that Rabbi Simon published. I was like, oh, I'm sure it's going to be great. So I bought it, took it home, and as I was preparing for this week, ta-da! He has a little chiddush on this point. In page 20, he quotes from a sefer that I never heard of, called Divrei Shira, from Reb Eliyahu Levin. I don't know who that is, but here he goes. He says a great point. He says, the truth is that these two answers, these two explanations, why you need four separate cups, are together. They are really two sides of the same coin. Because he explains that if you understood that the din of Dalet Kosos is one overarching mitzvah, then you could say that the Haggadah blends in to the sequence of the one integrated mitzvah. But by saying that they are four independent mitzvahs, then what you're saying is that the text of the Haggadah, what does that go with? What is that connected to? It's connected to the second cup. And it's distinct from the first cup. When you're saying the Haggadah now, I'm thinking about the second cup that I'm drinking. And that when I drank the first cup, when I drank the Kiddush, I'm not thinking about the second cup, and I'm not thinking about the Haggadah. If I would understand that it's not a hefsek, not being an interruption means it's part of one larger framework. And therefore, it's, so to speak, one mitzvah. By saying that it's four mitzvahs, that means it's not one framework. If it's not one framework, that means that each part of the Haggadah is independent and special. And so it's actually, his point is, it's actually not two reasons. And it makes sense that the Rif will bring a proof from the Gemara in Chulin about Hefsik to his central point that it's four different blessings. Because the point is that if it's one series of blessings, then the Haggadah is part of it. But if it's four independent, separate stages, then the Haggadah really does constitute a Hefsik, because it's not germane to the first blessing. You hear the point? That if it's four independent blessings, his suggestion is that is what makes the Haggadah into a Hefsik.
Well, the topic that we're not going to discuss today about drinking in between
is related to that issue.
But Rambam says you can other times, but you can't at the end, which kind of implies that there are certain places that it is connected and you're not
yes.
a and certain places where we're not. So that holds for the first and the second, but doesn't necessarily hold second to third and third to fourth.
Yes. So there you're going to have to say that there are other reasons why that's going to be independent,
right.
And there'll be a problem with most falakosos. So to summarize, we Ashkenazim are going to recite four blessings because these are to be considered four different separate elements. And because they're four different elements, we view the Haggadah as totally divorced from the first cup. It's only rooted in the second cup. That's going to be the conceptual underpinning as why each one is viewed independent. So how am I going to leave you with food for thought today? There was a tremendous Talmudic genius who lived in the 20th century. His name was Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher. He was born in Europe. He spent some time in Israel. He spent a lot of time in New York. So he has a beautiful Haggadah. And he collects the thoughts that go behind the four cups. So we've already talked about this several weeks ago. The four languages of redemption. The four cups in the story of Yosef. He also adds the four kingdoms of the four exiles. And he quotes a couple of other ideas. It's noteworthy, and this is what I would say is going to be your homework for thinking about before Pesach. Why is the number four so significant? It's specific that there are four sons and that there are four sections. I have an uncle, now he lives in Florida. He wrote an entire book called Sefer Arba Miyodea. The entire book is on the number four in the Haggadah. So he goes through scores of examples of the pattern number four coming through the Seder. The four times it says Avoda in the verse. The four times that it says Ani Velo, I and not. You notice that it's four. The four times that there is every possible permutation you can imagine. He has 116 examples of the number four in the Haggadah.
Wow.
So what I would leave you with for homework for next week in Yirtzeh Hashem or for the Seder is to think about why specifically the number four. What is it about the number four that we are emphasizing on the night of the Seder?